Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with the Reason TV Talk Show, and I have as my co-host Michael C. Moynihan of Reason, and our guests today are Julie Stewart of Families Against Mandatory Minimums, and Mark Hemingway of the National Review. Julie, let's start with you. Tell us very briefly, what is FAM's mission, and how are you feeling about the new administration?
Well, our mission is to basically get rid of one-size-fits-all sentencing and let judges be able to sentence someone to the punishment that fits the crime and their role in the crime. It's pretty fundamental. I think it's something that most Americans would agree that we're not asking for anything radical or trying just to get back to the basics of what our criminal justice system at sentencing should
look
like.
Do you ever lobby for somebody to get more time than the mandatory minimum?
The mandatory minimum sentences are so high, I don't need to.
Right. The entry point into the issue for you was mandatory drug laws, right?
That's right.
Where are we? Give a quick history of that. When did they start? Where are we at now? And do things look better under an Obama administration?
Well, the current round of mandatory minimums for drug offenses started in the 80s when crack cocaine was new and people were all concerned about crack and drug use was probably in the top five of the public concerns, and it was an election year. And so members of Congress were saying, we'll fix this problem by passing these stiff sentences, and the judge will have to give that sentence. And
because the drug kingpins were getting away with everything.
Yeah.
Right. Including street dealers and anybody involved.
Right. I mean, I don't know if people remember, but there was so much hype around crack cocaine. You try it once, you're hooked forever.
Right.
And crack babies on TV.
And
every night.
Know in my case, it took me 15 or 20 times before I was hooked, but...
So all that hysteria sort of led to the mandatory sentences that we have today. We've chipped away at them over the years. FAM has been around since 1991. Hard to believe it's been almost 18 years. Mm-hmm. But my brother went to prison in 1990 for growing marijuana, and that's how I got involved in this. He got a 5-year sentence without parole under the federal system. Why it went federal is beyond me, and there was no federal nexus. It was a perfectly petty anti-drug deal and the state could have handled. But I think that this administration will do something. They're very, they've said they'll do something on crack cocaine. Crack cocaine has been sort of the wedge issue that a lot of the groups have been talking about for a few years because crack penalties are so stiff. It takes just 5 grams, which is like 5 sweet and low packages, to get 5 years in prison without parole in the federal system.
When the mandatory minimums, or particularly the sentencing disparities for crack versus powder cocaine came, that was also pushed. I mean, that was a bipartisan effort.
All of it was bipartisan.
Yeah.
Senator Kennedy was behind the mandatory minimum sentences to start with.
Right. And will it be a bipartisan solution in mediating that, or is it going to be primarily Democrats, including a lot of House members of the Black Congressional Caucus who have rethought their positions, on mandatory minimums.
Charlie Rangel was a big
He was. They felt that mandatory sentences would create equality. Everyone would be sentenced the same.
And
it's not true.
Yeah, how has your experience been in dealing with these people that have such a bad record on this and have now sort of shifted and said, well, look, I mean, you know, the guy in New Canaan, Connecticut is not going to get the sentence that the guy in the Bronx will get, and they are in many ways responsible for that, aren't they? I mean, a lot of people that have sort of said that this is something we have to change are the very people that
made it so.
Made it so.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people have changed their position on this, the people in power, the legislators. I think that the problem is that there was this whole effort to create uniformity in sentencing across the country.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people bought into. But uniformity is a bizarre goal on the one hand. And, I mean, it's no better than disparity that's unwarranted. I mean, there shouldn't be unwarranted uniformity, and that's what's happened with mandatory sentences. So,
do you worry about somebody? I mean, Joe Biden created the Drug Czar's office. Mm-hmm. He is, if I'm not mistaken, in the Obama administration. Horrible.
I want to call a timeout so our viewers know Nick Gillespie is a huge Joe Biden hater.
It's an irrational.
In the middle of the day, Biden, you're going nuts. You're yelling about it.
I feel my teeth get whiter and my skin gets...
And tighter, Continue your question. I apologize, but you're a big Biden hater.
Eric Holder, not great on drug issues necessarily, but Joe Biden, absolutely awful. Hillary Clinton, basically awful. I mean, a lot of the people around Obama, pretty bad on the drug issue.
Well, Biden actually introduced a bill last year to make crack and powder cocaine penalties the same, which is huge on the one hand. I mean, nowhere in the country would 500 grams of crack cocaine get you a five-year prison sentence, and that was what he was, what his bill said. I think all of these people have sort of matured over the years, their perspectives on drugs. And also, it's just not a high-profile issue anymore for most people.
Wasn't there a thing recently where Obama's change.gov website or whatever, they had a thing where they were polling people for questions they wanted to ask the president, and the question that won, as it were, the top question with the most votes was something about marijuana legalization. And Obama said that, you know, he wasn't in favor of marijuana legalization, and I don't think anybody expected him to say otherwise. But don't you feel like, you know, the climate is such that that the voting population, there'll be less pressure from the grassroots on politicians when it comes to things like mandatory minimums?
I think that's been true for a number of years. I don't think it's changing just now. It's
Although with a Democratic president, I mean, then you get the fear, and particularly from conservatives, you know, we're going to have these liberal judges on the bench who will let you know, everybody go.
I mean, it's
because that was a big
judges.
That was a big part of the dynamic of mandatory minimums, right? That you know, it was like a Dirty Harry movie where you would bring these thugs and scumbags into you know, court, and then they would be let go by some, you know, namby-pamby.
But it's so bizarre.
Seriously, no, that was part of.
No, I know. I just visualizing some, you know, hippie behind the bench going, you know, man, just get out of my court.
Yeah. And leave some of that.
And leave some of that, and then use a word like dubage.
What underscores how political it is or was that they only selected drugs.
Right.
To apply mandatory minimums to. I mean, they allow judges to reign over these really complex white-collar cases with all this financial stuff going on. And they're like, yeah, we trust you to do that. That's okay.
Right.
But drugged, you know, we don't trust you. So, I mean, it was purely political. And I think that the politics have changed. I think that there isn't as much concern about drug use.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still high. And, yes, there's a lot of drug warriors out there. But it's not in the public mind in the way that the economy is. Or, you know, healthcare.
Mark, the National Review famously had a cover story, I think it was in the early 90s, that was pro-legalization or decriminalization, or anti-drug war, shall we say. What's the magazine's position now? I mean, is it an issue that's written about much anymore?
It's not really an issue that's written about much. I mean, you know, legalization is, I think mandatory minimums I would look at as a much more important issue. But legalization, certainly, and the list of ills of this country, legalizing marijuana is not real high up on my radar. Even marijuana especially, I think that there's that has to be looked at. I think the magazine's position, as far as I know, is still, you know, in favor of at least marijuana legalization to some degree. I don't remember off the top of my head how they editorialized on that. But, yeah, I mean, every once in a while it crops up on the corner or something like that where somebody writes something about it. But, yeah, the magazine's
Does Von Driel write a limerick about it?
Yeah. Von Driel.
How many of the staffers, you don't have to name any names, but how many of the staffers do you think regularly smoke pot or break drug laws?
Right. Well, there's a bong in my desk right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
If
we're going to be checking that. We're getting David Broder to check that out. Right after he gets the call back whether or not his mother loves him.
If any of the board of directors in New York are watching this, that was a joke. Well, the story famously, though, is that before deciding on how the magazine's position on drug legalization, William F. Buckley himself sailed his yacht out to international waters. And
he took a bunch of OxyContin for the pain, sailed out to international waters, and then did a gravity bong. With Taki. Was that back when that was I guess Taki wasn't into pot, right?
No, they took the Lord Haha out to international waters.
So, well, Mark, what do you think is going to be the, what's the signal issue for National Review as we enter the age of Obama?
Well, I think the signal issue is rebuilding the conservative movement. You know, clearly that's a broad thing and encompasses a lot of things, everything from regulatory policy to taxes. But the main thing is messaging. It's coming up with a coherent message wrapped around some sound policy proposals that's going to, you know, restore a little bit of faith in the Republican Party and the conservative movement in general. And
I think you should think about the central role that drugs can play in building community, particularly illegal drugs.
Nick, you want to take a break now?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
Do you understand this?
Okay. I think the police are coming anyway. So we're going to take a break. This is the Reason TV Talk Show with Michael C. Moynihan, Julie Stewart, Mark Hemingway, and I'm Nick Gillespie. Hi, welcome back to the Reason TV Talk Show. Mark, talk a little bit about the conservative crackup. I mean, the Republican Party is, I don't know, you know, they're like Goldman Sachs or something. I mean, they're hitting the skids here.
I mean, I'm certainly looking forward into the age of Obama. Mm-hmm. You know, some people have pointed out, you know, in recent days here that, you know, if Obama continues to be as pragmatic as he has been, mm-hmm. not saying there won't be plenty of room for him to, you know, screw up, you know, either through hubris or whatever else. But, you know, if Obama continues being as pragmatic and bipartisan as he has been, that could cause some serious problems with the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean that in a bad way.
You identify very much with the conservative and Republican are almost interchangeable terms.
Mm. Well, I don't know if that's the case at all, and I think that's frankly part of the problem. There's a lot of people in the Republican Party that are, you know, I don't know whether it's just not that they necessarily don't self-identify; they're mm-hmm. just not very principled. I mean, you know, they say they're for things, and then when it comes to issues like, you know, bailouts and SCHIP right. and whatever else, all of a sudden they are, you know, moderates, and mm-hmm. And I think that's a real problem. There's no coherent vision that everybody in the party is not necessarily, you know, marching in lockstep with, but everybody at least buys into and is invested.
Where do social issues fit into this? Because libertarians, Reason, obviously a libertarian organization. Julie, you worked at Cato, right?
Yeah,
some libertarians in the woodpile there. Where do social issues fit into this? Or it's actually, I wouldn't even make it that, individual freedom issues within a larger conservative movement.
Well, this is a good question, and this is something that's going to sort of have to be figured out marching forward. But the one real non-negotiable social issue, I think, for Republicans is life. Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, is highly overrated.
Trust me.
I don't know. I mean, certainly I tend to buy into, you know, maybe it's my own ideological biases mm-hmm. being pro-life myself. I tend to buy into my colleague Ramesh Manuhar's mm-hmm. arguments that the Republicans, if they ever compromise on that issue, will cease to have the capacity to be.
Even though a majority of registered Republicans are in favor of abortion, legal abortion.
Well, I think the dynamics are a lot more complicated than that. You know, certainly I don't think that the Republican Party and leading up to this point has necessarily been unwelcoming to people mm-hmm. who are pro-choice. And I don't think that the reason why we're in the pickle that we're in now right. has anything to do with the fact that we're not ideologically rigid enough about right. allowing pro-choice members. So I don't think that that's going to, you know, continue right. to be a problem going forward.
Well, isn't the reason the Republican Party is in the tank is that Bush and the Republican Congress was awful on everything?
Yes.
I mean, there is no exception to that, really.
Yeah,
because even if you grant that the war was a good idea, and I understand you're a critic of the Iraq War, but even if you grant that it was the right idea, it was horribly executed.
Yes.
Incompetently.
I think that's my personal opinion. Yeah. I think that's exactly right. I mean, you do not subdue a country the size of California with 80,000 right. troops. I'm no military expert. My dad's a retired Marine colonel, and, you know, I knew that, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact that the Secretary of Defense apparently didn't know that is,
right.
is a problem. That said, I agree that the main thing that's done Republicans in is just a total callous disregard for spending mm-hmm. and basic domestic policy issues. I mean, the amazing thing about the last election was that John McCain could not talk about an economic issue other than spending. Mm. I mean, it could not, to save his life, talk about anything other than spending and earmarks. And, like, you know, I agree, you know, earmarks is a classic example. Like, this is a good issue, you know, and it's good to bring up once in a while to rile the base a little bit. But, you know, you look at what earmarks are as a percentage of discretionary right. spending, this is not the problem.
No, it's time.
Yeah. So
it sells, though.
Yeah, it does.
It does sell.
Yeah.
Billy, who do you, does FAM partner more with one party or the other? I mean, I know you're not a partisan group, but
right.
who, I mean, how do you navigate the politics of your
well,
issue?
Neither party is particularly good on this,
right.
but the Congressional Black Caucus is mm-hmm. interested in the racial overtones of sentencing,
right.
so they tend to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't win an election on the Congressional Black Caucus.
Right.
So we, you know, work very hard to find Republicans, especially mm-hmm. who are sympathetic, Representative Inglis from South Carolina has been a great ally, actually. And Dan.
Who is that?
Inglis. Bob Inglis from South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah.
He's in good contact with a federal judge down there, the mm-hmm. chief judge, actually, from the Fourth Circuit, who thinks mandatory minimums are a mm-hmm. failure. And Dan Lundgren, surprisingly, more thoughtful on this than you would expect.
Because as Attorney General of California, he was all in favor of federal raids on legal medical marijuana dispensaries in California.
I think time mm-hmm. sort of makes people mellows them a little over this drug issue. To use an odd
word. I was going to say a lot of weed and some whiskey. Yeah. Are you going to be bringing Kid Rock around to lobby?
Don't do that. Dangerous.
Yeah, that's right.
We could get Kid Rock because one of our board members actually is in the music industry, and that's one of his bands.
Oh, wait. One of your board members is in the music industry? I mean, you don't have to use euphemisms on your music.
He's drug dealers.
What's the famous Bill Hicks quote about if you don't believe in drug use, you're going to have to throw your record collection out the window or whatever?
But are you a hardcore libertarian? You believe in free minds and free markets?
I do. Yeah. How could I not, sitting here at Reason Magazine?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
No, I do believe in that. I think that I'm probably not as hardcore as the two of you, mm-hmm. But then you have examined every issue.
I bought this coffee with a gold brick this morning. Just saying. That's how hardcore I am.
25.
I'm for free minds and free markets, but I compromise those principles when it comes to free beer.
That's true. And I don't think anybody... I think that drugs should be freely available, but I don't think I should ever have to pay for them. But so what are the other issues that energize you looking into the future?
Around criminal justice issues
or
anything?
Yeah, I mean, that can't be your whole life, right? Are you looking forward to... we'll have a sophisticated president now?
I am looking forward to listening to someone who can put a sentence together and make sense. Yes.
Really?
I mean,
What are you talking about, Biden? I think,
he's back to Biden again. He's you're like the crazy uncle. Just wants to turn everything back to Biden.
Obama is not he is a mellifluous speaker, but he doesn't say anything.
He's a terrible extemporaneous speaker.
I think so.
He's a great writer.
First book was really good. The second book, I agree with Andy Ferguson of the Weekly Standard. The second book is just by the numbers.
Yeah. You put a microphone in front of Obama unexpectedly, and he's not a good speaker.
Although he went to dinner at George Will's house this past week.
With your editor, by the way, right? Your editor, Rich Lowry, was
it's
at
been
this.
Reported that my editor was at.
But you don't know this.
Starburst coming through the screen.
Did you read Rich Lowry had this crush on Sarah Palin? He saw Starburst coming through the screen.
He was also on drugs that night.
Yeah, I was going to say, check your prescriptions.
I'm sure Rich would like to add a little context to those remarks these days.
Sure. There was an unsafe drop in blood pressure, I think.
But did Rich actually attend this conservative confab at
I can neither Wilson? Confirm nor deny.
So he did? Okay.
I did know that.
Do you buy the problem with Obama is he's too thin?
Yeah, that was. What was that?
No, that's who part of. That? I saw at some point in the primaries he was going to lose because he was too thin.
There was a Colson Whitehead in the New York Times.
What a fake Colson Whitehead!
It's like a Batman villain or something.
There was a lot of discussion about that. How Peter Beinhart, I think, had famously, mm-hmm. I think it was him, famously written that op-ed a few years ago about how Bush was obsessed with exercise or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
How this was a big negative in Bush, but, you know, when Obama, you know, works out 3 hours
a day. Well, you know, we've had very kind of exercise-prone presidents. It's a shift from, like, Nixon and whatnot.
And Taft.
But the whole country is more exercise.
Yeah, I guess so.
No,
actually, I'm going in the other direction. Yeah, sadly.
But Bush and Obama are a whole other level of people to go to the gym. I mean, they're both ridiculous.
Who, Bush and Obama?
Yeah, both of them are both ridiculous.
Really? But he's a secret smoker, isn't he, Obama?
Yeah,
that's why he has to go to the gym.
I guess so, yeah.
So, Mark, what's your biggest fear for the next 4 years? What is the disaster scenario?
My biggest fear is that the disaster scenario is bad on two levels. One is that, you know, the Republicans and overall conservative movement, and I include libertarians in that, and I think that, that part of the
we
problem
reject
is,
that, by the way.
No, but I think part of the problem is that libertarians haven't had as much of a place at the table. You know, it used to be that you know, National Review and other institutions and Reason, whatever, you know, would air out these conservative libertarian debates and come to
I can tell
some
you
fusionist compromise.
To give an indication of that, at National Review's 50th anniversary banquet that was held a few years ago, the Reason table was like six rows behind the log cabin Republicans.
It was across Broadway in the H&H Bagels.
You weren't near Ricardo Montalban's table?
No, they weren't even letting us touch him. Julie, what is your big fear for the next 4 years?
My fear is that this whole opportunity to actually make a difference on sentencing will be squandered, and that everybody will be too damn afraid to touch it. And that, or the other fear is that they'll only tinker with crack cocaine sentences. Which, I mean, you know, that's of some use, but it
But you do agree with Whitney Houston that crack is whack?
That's right. Well, yeah, it's great.
Sentencing
is even whacker. Yeah, or whacker.
I can do
Mark,
that.
Did we get your fear, or did we just trail off into some discussion of a slight against reason?
No, just my fear is that there will be no organized opposition to Obama, which I think is bad on two levels. One is because, you know, I believe
Bush has put into place,
well, yes.
Right?
No, seriously.
Invading Afghanistan, bailouts, et cetera.
I believe in conservative principles, and I believe in them being applied to libertarian principles, and I believe in them being applied to policy. But also, I believe that, you know, the other party is not nearly as sharp as the opposition is. A mess. Mm-hmm. So it's bad for the country either way. So
I agree.
All right. Well, do you have any fears, Michael?
That?
Do you have any fears?
I mean, generally, spiders.
I know
communists.
Okay.
Not yet. I'm holding fire for the moment.
Dentists. Right. You don't like dentists.
I don't like dentists.
Yeah, sure. Well, that wraps it up for the Reason TV Talk Show. With I was Nick Gillespie. That is Michael C. Moynihan of Reason.
Past tense?
Our guests were Julie Stewart of Families Against Mandatory Minimums and Mark Hemingway of National Review.